Walmart. Call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. For the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me, Bob, and Ellen. And the reason why is there's three of us here with about 150 years of experience.
At least.
And so if we give the women their due, then the two of us are worth 35, north of 35 each. So that's 70. How about you guys?
50.
Well, actually, you've been there. You've been there 51 years at Larry Harker's, and okay. I've been there probably about
32.
35.
Okay, so 80 plus 70. So I said 150. Yeah. How was that for a doggone
really
good guess? And both of us have gray hair. We're not going to talk about Ellen's hair, but both of the men have gray hair.
And only my hairdresser knows.
Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem or a code, or if you have, we're really good at, this is what's going on. We need symptoms, by the way. We need symptoms. This is what's going on, and this is what somebody told me to do. And if it's an internet, somebody told me what to do, then those are the kinds of things that we're pretty good at, and we're capable of digesting what they told you over the internet. But just keep in mind, the internet guys, you have no idea who they are. They could be anybody from a doctor to a lawyer, which are the two guys that seem to know everything, like car guys. And then on top of that, they can also be a convict in some prison somewhere that's got access to the internet and everything in between that. Action Auto Repair is one of the shops on my best car repair shops list. You can find that list at marksalem.com. Action is located at I-17 in Deer Valley. It's a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that served Deer Valley in the North Phoenix area since 1983. And Tom, the owner, I've known since 1979 or 1980. Him and I crossed paths back then, and I liked him then, and I like him now. So no matter what your needs are, and if you don't have a repair shop near Deer Valley and I-17, may I suggest you call and get an appointment for an oil change and just see how they treat you and see how you like them. They have ASE Master Certified Technicians. That's the highest level you can attain. Plus, they've got a BMW Master Technician who's been around the block with the BMWs. Action Auto Repair, I-17, and Deer Valley. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you're welcome to call us. 602-508-0960. So it's another day at the salt mine last week, huh?
Yes, we survived it.
And then I want to recap something. We sent a caller to you with an F-35. Was it a Nissan or an Isuzu? It had to do with coils.
Infinity.
Okay. I was close.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Okay, so let's talk about the symptoms first.
Well, the symptoms was virtually didn't run. It would fire and then quit. basically, when we got it in, we started with the diagnostic check to find out if it was fuel, ignition, fire, and so on.
And people don't understand how important that is. I talk about that all the time. I was talking to a guy yesterday at the car wash who has this little bitty hot rod, and he said, it falls on its face, and I think it's going into limp mode. I said, I think I'd try something different. You know, you see that port on your intake? Let's put propane to that, and when it starts falling on its face, let's open up the propane can and see if it all of a sudden it takes off. What's the fuel pressure when it, I don't know. See, that's part of the issue. But anyway,
yeah.
Spark, fuel, computers.
Yeah, compression, so on. So,
yep.
We determined it was a lack of a fire ignition. The problem was is when we found out that it had ignition coil problems, it really struck us odd as we lost, I think it was 5 out of 6 ignition coils on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impossible to just be driving down the road, which is what their complaint was, and all of a sudden it goes bad. How does, you know, 5 ignition coils go bad?
And not the other one.
Yeah.
And see, that's what keyed me was, is we had 5 go bad, but not the other.
Not the last one.
And so if we had a major problem, it would affect all of them, like a crankshaft sensor or a camshaft sensor. It would wipe all of them out. But in your case, 5 out of 6.
5 out of 6. And so anyway, the tech went in and started running ground fault tests on it, voltage drops, find out where we were at. And basically, we found out we had a ground problem. We found out the battery cable was loose on it. We also found that the ground strap to the engine was bad. So we went in once we found that option, we found out that's all tied to a ground strap that goes to that. And when you lose that, it overheats the coils and literally melts them.
Okay.
And so once we found the answer, it was a matter of replacing coils, fixing the ground straps. Now, that particular model also had, or this particular vehicle had, a engine mount problem. And we had talked to the customer about the engine mounts, and they wanted to forego that at the present. So what we ended up having to do is to add another ground strap to compensate for that loss of ground when that mount the engine jumped up in the air.
Well, and what you're saying is there's probably three mounts. There was left and right, mm-hmm. and probably a rear, a tranny mount. And so if the mounts are bad, broken, soft as marshmallows, then the motor's rocking a whole bunch more. And if you've got an 8-inch ground over here, you might need a 10-inch ground if the motor's rocking back and forth.
It's pulling on it.
Yeah. Exactly. So when we talk about grounds, checking grounds and volt drops, this is what we're talking about. We need a connection directly, a clean and strong and firm connection from the negative cable through the frame, the engine, the dashboard, what else? Front bumper, grill, everything.
Yeah, the ground is as important as the power or the voltage. In fact, a lot of people don't know it, but back in the 50s, we used to have positive grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about a whole different world. It's very important to have a good ground, especially with computer systems and when you're talking about systems that are running 1 volt or less signals going through them.
Okay. Now, when you go to a circuit that you're expecting 12 to 13 volts on and you got 8, most people are going to go crazy with that, but in our world, on a 1 to 10 scale, that's a what, 3 or 4? But what the question is do we have a power supply problem or do we have a ground problem? Mm-hmm. So it could be on either leg of the in and the out, if you'd call it that.
My tech, Jeremy, he's actually built a load machine where he could load each circuit and find out which it is.
Okay. So he's gonna turn the hose on from a dribble to a huge amount of water.
Right.
He's gonna create a load, so if there's a bad connection. Now, sometimes you're looking at your voltmeter and you've got a bad ground or whatever, so you put a wrench on this and as soon as you touch it, all of a sudden it changes the voltmeter. And so you go from nothing to 12 volts or something like that. Or you go the other way around. Yeah. So it's an issue of, if you know what you're doing, this is something that's normal. So you put 5 coils on it, and you fix the grounds. Now, where else? The battery cable is going to go to the fenders. It's going to go to the grill. It's going to go to the engine that sits on 4 rubber balloons. It's going to go to the engine. It's going to go probably to the transmission. It's going to go to the back suspension. It's going to go to everything that's metal. All the way around the car. So if somebody does some work on the car and they forget to put the ground wire or they don't see it and it's dangling behind the motor and they don't put it back on the engine, we can have lots of problems.
Oh, yes.
And it's crazy problems. When I turn on the headlights, the windshield wipers flap. Those kinds of crazy things that you're not going to replace the wiper motor and you're not going to replace the headlight switch. You're going to have to go in there and figure out where the electrical malfunction is.
Yeah, these systems have really multiplied with these new cars. We had one the other day, an Impala, that has a system where when you come up to a stop, the engine shuts off.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you touch the accelerator, it goes. Well, this was brought in because he had a noise. What we found out is the second battery, which is in the trunk, didn't get hooked. The ground didn't get hooked up to it. So consequently, the starter, every time they would touch it, would start running with the engine running. And then energize that starter while the engine's running, and that was his noise.
Makes a heck of a noise. Folks, it's kind of like when you try to start your car when it's already running. There's a heck of a clatter that goes on. Yeah. All righty, we got Gil, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We got 4 lines open, but Gil's first. Gil, good morning.
Gil,
I'm sorry. It's Gil's fault because Gil said Gil, but it's really Jill. So, Jill, how can we help you?
Hi, I have a 2007 Saturn View with 82,000 miles on it, and it's got the battery light has started coming on intermittently. We took it to our repair shop that we've been at for 20 years. They replaced the alternator, but that very afternoon the battery light came back on, and it continued that for a couple of days. I took it back in there yesterday, and the light would not come on for them. They ran everything they could run, and they can't find out the problem. and the light is still coming on 3 or 4 times a day, just for like 60 seconds, and I don't know what to do.
Boy, the intermittent problems are really tough. But we're back to, it could be ground, could be cable connections.
It could be, and here's the deal. The alternator monitors the voltage at the battery. And so a fully charged battery is actually 13 volts as opposed to 12 volts. The alternator will actually run up to 13, 14, 8, maybe even 15 volts. The computer needs to look at those numbers, and I would imagine you're going to get a battery light on if we drop under 12 or something like that. So this is information that we'd have to look up. And once we looked up to see what is it saying that it's not supposed to see, then that will give us our footprint that we can follow. I probably wouldn't have done an alternator, especially with all we've got is an intermittent battery light, and we've never had a dead battery. We've never had the complaint of the battery's intermittently dead. So
yeah, I think my best advice would be to try to give it to them for a little bit of period of time where they could run it, and because it could be a heat problem. Have you noticed the problem when it after you drive it when it occurs, or is it first thing in the morning when it's colder?
No, it's after you drive it. I can't seem to see a pattern, so it doesn't start up that way.
How long does it stay on for?
60 seconds, about 60 seconds.
We had some problems almost identical to that, and it turned out to be the connector to the alternator that was the issue. And we had some problems with those. So somebody needs to go in there and do some little wiggle checking and with the equipment hooked up. But it's going to be tough, but I think the best advice would be to give it to them for a little period of time and let them play with it.
And the wiggling point, that with the appropriate meters connected to everything, and you start wiggling the plug for the alternator, and all of a sudden you see the diode pattern go away or come back, or you see the voltage drop and come back, and actually you can hear the alternator wind up with an experienced ear. So the alternator's humming along, and when you disconnect it, the hum drops dramatically, and it freewheels. It's kind of like nothing there. So the other issue, too, is the default is it's not causing her any problems. She hasn't run out of electrical. She hasn't had to call a tow truck for a jump start. This might be something that's going to fail, and it might be something that someone might say, you can spend hundreds of dollars on the diagnostic side, or you can wait till it gets worse and easier to find.
A little more consistent.
A little bit more consistent. That's kind of a tough thing to do, but sometimes we told somebody that the other day, you're just going to have to wait because it's just too intermittent, and we've done everything we know what to do, and we're just going to have to. We've got I think it's an Infinity 2, that when you turn the steering wheel really hard, it'll stay. If you turn it to the right, it'll want to pull to the right. Okay, rack bushings aren't bad. Tie rods aren't locked up. Upper shock mounts aren't locked up. We disconnect the tie rod end, and we can rotate those wheels under load with your hand and the rear suspension, and we've tightened every bolt underneath it. But for whatever reason, this thing, and it's no matter whether you're loading the fluid on the power steering or not, and we said to them, it's no real big deal, but you're just going to have to wait. Everybody, we fixed that before on a lot of cars, but we checked all those places already.
In there.
And then now you just kind of, okay, we'll wait. But when he drives it, it only happens intermittently. But my guys can make it happen every time by jerking the wheel to a 90-degree right or a left.
Ironically, we had one almost similar to that. And do you know about how many miles was on that vehicle?
Over 150, I'm guessing.
Okay. What we found is at the end of the rack, it was building up with a sludge.
Okay.
And it was sticking that seal. And we ended up replacing the rack on it and cured it.
And that cured it.
Yeah.
We looked at the rack mounts to make sure that the rack wasn't sliding left and right.
Right.
And we did put up from a half a turn to 1.5 turns on pretty much all the cradle and body mounts. So we thought, okay, we got this. No, we didn't get it. So, but that's an interesting.
Right. I think I would still advise the guy to drive it for a little while because that's an expensive
guess. Yeah. And here's your options. We could do an $800, $900 guess, or you can wait till it gets worse. Chances of you losing your steering are slim and none, right?
Yeah.
Slim and none.
Especially if you have to jam it to one side to do it.
To get
how
it
often
done.
Are you doing that?
Right. And in his case, it's intermittent. He says, I can go weeks without it having memory of the last turn I made. So if I make a right turn, then it pulls to the right. If I make a left turn, a week later, it pulls to the left. And most of the time, it's going straight down the road.
We were lucky enough. Ours did it consistent. So
okay.
Big difference.
Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You got two old guys here that have been around the block. If you want to talk 50 cars, we can do that pretty good, too. If you want to talk points and condenser. And then we have Ellen. Ellen is the one with the whip. She's the one that sits in the front office. How many times do the guys call you and want to talk to a man?
More times than I'd probably want to say.
And same way with my daughter and my wife. Mm-hmm. And they probably know more than most men that are on the phone anyway.
If I don't know, I'll pass them on. I don't try to guess or anything. So,
but you can at least honor me by asking me.
Yes,
you know?
Give me a chance.
Exactly. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see what time it is. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to go straight to the phones because that's where we should have been. Chris, you're up first. How can I help you, Chris?
Hey, how you doing this morning, gentlemen?
Good.
I have a 95 GMC pickup, and I had an ignition module put in the steering column by a dealership.
Okay.
And after the car sits for 5 days, it drains the battery and it won't start. I'm trying to find somebody who could figure out what circuit's staying open and maybe just pull that fuse when I'm letting it sit for a while?
Well, that's part of the problem. Well, first of all, that's an ignition switch, not an ignition module.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. So that we're going to use the right terminology. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a
10.
Okay. On the front side. But this isn't the worst we have to deal with.
Oh, no.
Okay. So to find this, to go through and look through the fuses and find the draw and all that kind of stuff and identify which circuits it's on a 1 to 10 scale, that's for us gray-haired guys a 4 or 5 or a 6. Mm-hmm. We don't know where it's going to go. I'll grant you that. But in your particular case, I don't know if the ignition switch was a good idea or bad, but this is going to be, in my shop, the diagnostic's going to be 75 to 125, which is what we quote everybody. You're probably in the same boat.
All right.
Okay. So quickly go through the what do you do first.
Well, our initial problem is to find out where the draw is. Mm-hmm. You shut everything down, like, you know, turn off your ignition, and then you hook up and find out if you have a draw in this system. Then it's going to be a matter of going through. In this particular case, you can go in, pull fuses, find out which fuse drops the draw and the draw that you're having. And then you get a blueprint of this system and find out what's on that system, and then you start checking each one of those to find out what the draw is being caused by. I hate to say it, but that ignition switch, I agree, was a notorious problem. But a lot of times it's something that's being activated that's causing your draw.
And here's the deal. We make it sound pretty easy, but each fuse can have five different circuits on it, three different circuits. So it's not like you're going to pull the windshield wiper fuse and just say, it's not the wipers, because there's four other circuits on that stupid fuse. So we use an inductive amp probe, you may too, mm-hmm. on a positive or negative. And what we've been doing is we've taken the inductive amp probe, and you know how you got your positive cable that splits in and then splits again, then splits again, then splits again. We go through each one of those, and usually we can find it. But what we found is even when you figure out what areas it's going to, you still can't find it.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to follow it to the ground or the power on that circuit. This oftentimes, just for you, Chris, this oftentimes is $160 to find it and $3 to fix it. It doesn't always mean it's going to be a big part. That happens sometimes.
Gotcha. So the ignition switch the truck was defaulting into like third gear, so a limp home mode, so that's what they diagnosed. But when they were in the steering column, they did something to either the hazard switch or the turn signal switch. So I have a guess where it could be, but like you said, it could be a million different things.
Yeah. Well, here's the good news. They have to diagnose where it's at in order to say it's not their fault. Yeah, so it's the same way with Bob and the same way with me. You can't say it's not your fault till you find out what it is. So okay. I would start back with them. But I think, what part of town do you live in?
51 and Bell.
Okay, 51 and Bell. Probably 51 and Bell. Gosh, I've got two guys up in that area.
Bell and 40th Street, Bell
yeah.
and 32nd Street.
Okay.
Isn't there a guy on 32nd and Thunderbird or something, or Greenway that, electrician guy?
That's, well, not on my best car repair shops list. You got Blackwell at 40th Street
yeah.
and 1 mile south of Bell. What's that called? I can't think of it right
south
now.
South of Bell?
But 1 mile south of Bell.
Is it not Virginia?
No,
you know,
that's
which,
down
north of the street.
Oh, Thunderbird Automotive?
No. It's Blackwell. His name is Blackwell, I'm pretty sure he could track this down for you, but I would take it back to the dealer because they gave you something you didn't have when you went there. So that's
okay,
the best idea.
Real quick, Greg May from Phoenix Body Works, and Phoenix Body Works did a fantastic job, and what great people they are over there.
Well,
I highly recommend them.
Thank you very much for that. I'm real proud of that paint and body shop because I get lots of calls just like yours, so I really appreciate that.
Okay, thank you guys very much.
You betcha. Thank you very much. Let's see. We got time. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what can we do for you?
Hey, good morning. I have a 2008 Honda Civic where the little indicator on the dash says no. That's all it says. And when we put on, you know, the diagnostic tool, they can't find it. They said they would have to, you know, replace the whole not the whole electrical system, but, you know, the whole fuse panel, which I highly doubt. When they can't find the problem, you know, on the DBM or whatever that's called, how do you then diagnose, you know, individual...
Wait a minute. We're both scratching our heads. This light on your dash literally says N-O?
It says no, yeah. That's all it says.
Neither one of us has ever seen that before.
That. Really?
Yeah, neither one of us. But it's easy because you need to get out the owner's manual and find out what that no means.
I did, and there was nowhere... that I found it.
Okay, well, that's a problem because somebody came in not too long ago and said that there's a guy sitting on the toilet on my dash and it was a -4 and it looked like a guy sitting on the toilet and it was the minus and then the 4 and it looks like the guy sitting there with his hands on his knees on the toilet. And so it was a -4. That's all it was. So the answer to your question, Mike, is this is kind of easy. We need to identify what that is. And no one can fix it until we know. Now, what color is it? Is it yellow, orange, or red?
I haven't driven it in a while, but I believe it's yellow.
Okay. Well, yellow means caution. Red means stop. Don't go anywhere. But we're going to have to get an owner's manual, or we're going to have to do something to identify what the light's trying to tell us, because going into the code doesn't mean nothing. That light could easily mean that the trunk light is on. That light means that the courtesy lights have been activated. There's so many things it could be, but we have to find out what it is. But Bob and I have never seen a Honda with the word. However, somebody's going to call us and tell us about it, and we're happy to hear that. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. So 08 Civic on the dash, it says no. Oh, if you've ever seen that before, and if you've ever fixed that before, we'd like to hear that one. Oh, and by the way, Ellen, you don't know what that is, do you?
No, I don't. But okay. I said, let's call our tech and ask him. He seems to know everything.
Well, I was just checking to see if the women know everything.
I know what no means, yeah.
Well, and you know how to say, I don't know, see?
Yes, I know.
And
no.
Renee likes it for that, because there's times I say, I don't know. So, and I don't know, but I do know this. I've got 6 seconds to get the heck out of this break. And so I'm going to do it. Doug, you stay right there. You'll be my first caller. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Bob and Ellen from Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Been around since Jesus was a baby. And I think actually you worked on covered wagons back then, didn't you?
Yeah, we were pushing them out.
Anyway, a great diagnostician. Bob and his staff are just really good, and they just have the tenacity of a bulldog. So 38th Avenue and Indian School, they're my partners today. And we're going to tell you real quick about S&S Tire on the west side. S&S has three locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a comprehensive line of tires, so you can pull in and say, give me a good, better, best price on four tires mounted and balanced out the door. I write my check before I hand you the keys. They can do that. And the best part about that is if you're going to keep the car forever, then maybe you want the good, the better, the best. But if it's a lease car and you got to turn it in 6 months, maybe you don't want the best. So one way or another, they can give you a hand. They also do front-end work, suspension, alignments, and every really thing in between. But for as far as tires are concerned, they've got from wheelbarrows to tractor tires and everything in between. So you're not likely to have something that needs tires that can't be handled by S&S Tire and Auto Service. Again, Peoria, Surprise, Goodyear, good West Side vendor, and a good friend of mine. Let's go back to the phones, and let's talk to Doug. Doug, good morning. How can we help you?
How you doing?
Good.
Actually, I don't have a problem, but your timing for having Bob and Ellen on couldn't be more fortuitous.
Okay.
I'm the guy that had that, or has the Infiniti, or the stepdaughter with the Infiniti, and Bob just fixed my BMW, or fixed a big portion of it, and directed me on how to fix the rest, and I just wanted to give him a holler and let him know that replacing those grommets probably nailed 99.9% of the problem, because I'm sitting in that BMW right now, just started it up, and it purred like a kitten.
Now, it's not him. He got that information from Ellen, okay? She's the one that told him how to fix your car. You didn't even say anything.
I just wanted to take a minute to give some props to Larry Harker and his shop.
Okay, perfect.
Well, thank
perfect.
You. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good to
thank
hear
you.
From you.
So the problem and grommets, tie them together. What was the symptom? What was the repair?
Rough idle when cold.
Okay.
After probably a minute warming up, it would go away. He actually had two problems. He had a PC system, which is a notorious problem on those things. It made an extreme big vacuum leak.
Okay.
We found that, fixed that, but after fixing that, we still had a little bit of a leanness. And what he found was that the grommets on the valve cover were leaking on it, creating another leak. And that would go away after a few seconds. The seals would swell up and then seal back up.
But you know what we used to do back in 100 years ago? We'd take those grommets off and soak them in brake fluid, and they'd swell up. Because back then, you might have to drive 30, 40 miles to find something or to buy something. So we'd just swell up those rubber grommets, put them back on, and tell them, we don't know how long that's going to last, but this is a good diagnostic tool, right?
Yep.
Just swell them up, put them back on, and say, hey, try this.
Well, you got to realize that BMW, that was a 2.5-hour job.
Oh, for the grommets?
Just to get the grommets out of there.
Okay, why make it tough on yourself? All right. But I like this. This is what I heard on it from a business point of view. You guided him and told him what was wrong with it, and he did it himself, and that took care of 90% of what he said. That's kind of nice. All righty, we've got somebody on the line, Gil?
Robert.
Okay, Robert, you're up. What can we do for you?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
I've got a 2007 Ford F-150, and it's running just fine. My question has to do with the tires on it. I don't have a lot of mileage on the vehicle. I've got 52,000 miles on it, and as I said, it's a 2007. I've still got the original tires, which were Michelin.
Okay.
And they look good to me. They still have a good amount of tread left. And I'm just wondering if they've gotten so old that I need to replace them out of safety concerns just by virtue of their age.
Okay, I can answer you that because I'm an expert in that particular issue, and I testify in court about that. I don't have an ex-wife, but I wouldn't let my ex-wife go from North Phoenix to South Phoenix in your car because those tires are likely made somewhere around 2006 to be put on a 2007. Today we know that 10-year-old tires become really, really bad. And I'll tell you this, Discount Tire and my shop, and first of all, let me say Discount Tire first, and my shop as a result of what they've done, we don't even touch them. We won't patch them. We won't rotate them. We won't air them up. We won't do nothing to a 10-year-old tire because here's what happens. This happens once or twice or three times a month. I hear of this. So somebody goes in and has their tires rotated. A week later, a month later, the tire blows out. People are hurt, injured, or killed. Then all of a sudden, it's, why didn't the shop tell you you had 12, 13, 14-year-old tires? We had a car come in the other day. The tires were 21 years old. 21 years old. Now, Alan just told me the other day that the Corvette tires are 10 years old, but it has 20,000 miles on it. I'm thinking, okay. Well, he goes, no, it's not okay. I already set the tires for it. So my answer to you, Robert, is please, for the sake of yourself and your other loved ones, it's time to put tires on it. I don't care what they look like. And for us, we're actually drilling 2-inch holes in the sidewall of those tires we take off so they'll never go on another car. So we have a hole saw, and we just drill holes in the sidewalls. And we're just, because that's another risk.
Life's just too short.
Yeah. So we didn't used to have this problem, but today we know that most of the people that die because of blowouts have tires that are 10 years and north of that.
We have a hard time telling them that they say, well, there's a lot of tread still left on them, but we say, hey, it's not safe. They're okay. Too old. We've had just, last week we had somebody come in and said, you have to get rid of them.
Every car comes in, we check the tires, and then we say to you, we have a stamp. Your tires are 10 years old. You've been warned. You need to replace those now, and we need you to initial that. Now, some people won't, and that's okay because we have camera systems in this lobby. So we'll just take a picture of your face, and we'll put it along with your work order and say, we told that person, but they refused, and we just write refused on there. We're not offended by that,
No. But
it's just a situation where it's a safety issue. We're not doing this to sell tires. We're doing this because there's a better-than-even chance that somebody's going to die with those tires the older they get.
And a blown tire can cause a lot of major accidents, too.
And you can hurt a lot. You can come out okay, but the truck actually wipes out a family of five. So at that particular point, you've ruined lots of people's lives because of the tires. Now, does that happen a lot? Like I said, 2 or 3 times a month in my world. But in the United States across the board, and I'm only dealing with a couple of insurance companies, and there's more than 2 or 3, then that's a big deal. Okay, well, Vic, you stay right there because you're first. Robert, thank you very much for that. That's a conversation piece that will happen a lot. And if you need to know whether or not how old your tires are, you can go buy any discount tire or any tire shop like S&S on the west side. They will tell you exactly how old your tires are. So from the time they were birthed to the time that they should be pulled is certainly 10 years. We'll be right back.
Hello.
Like she always says, I don't know. And, well, was it the black or green handle? I don't remember. And so my question is, say she accidentally did put diesel, would I be able to tell if my car was running diesel in it when it shouldn't be? Will it make symptoms or signs?
It won't even make it home.
It wouldn't?
Okay. No, it won't even make it home. And I tell you what, my son's name is Alan Salem. Okay? He's put gas in his diesel, and then he put diesel in his wife's car. And he didn't make it home at any of the time. His mind is somewhere else. He's got 17 phones on his belt. He's just like all the rest of these young people with phones sticking out all their ears. And he's not paying attention. So there's a good chance. I can tell you this. 99% of the vehicles that are towed in never made it home. And they weren't towed from the house. So the idea is if she got home and she drove more than 5 or 6 miles, there's a good chance that she didn't mix gas with diesel.
We just had one, about a month ago, and it just came from right down the street, and that's where it ended up, and right by our shop it came right in. So.
And I'm going to admit that Renee put diesel in our lawnmower not too long ago. And so you know what, though? It ran.
Oh, it did.
I got the choke out, and I got it running, and I overcame the governor. And it was knocking like crazy, and I thought, oh, she blew up
smoking
the motor.
Smoking pretty good.
It was smoking. And I thought, okay, well, that's because I have the choke out. Right. So I'm sitting there running it, and it's making noise like the rods are knocking and everything. And then I don't know what made me look at it, and I look in the tank, and she had put diesel in it. She said I did, but I'm telling you right now, she did. Sometimes she just does things like that. So anyway, Vic, I don't think you got any concerns.
Yeah, the car's running fine, so thank you.
Yeah, you betcha. You bet. Gas in diesel or diesel in gas or vice versa, and that's a good question because we deal with that a lot. Luke, you're up next. What can we do for you?
Yeah, hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have this 1996 Plymouth Voyager, I believe the best car for its age, 88,000 miles approximately. Running great. I brought this problem last year to you, and I took it to a diagnostician. He couldn't find anything. And now it does that symptom again, and that is when I started, all of a sudden, it dies. And then when I start it, instantly it comes on again. So it happens, you know, like, let's say if I drive like 250 miles in a week, it does it, you know, like about two, three times.
Okay.
I don't know. It should be electrical. What it is, I don't know. I thought I should bring this up back to your attention.
Okay. Well, it's not a good idea for you to pronounce it's electrical, because then you're going to send somebody in the wrong direction. Let me rephrase everything for you. Is this happened cold or hot or both?
Okay. Today exactly when I started, it happened twice when it was cold.
Okay. Has it ever happened warm?
Seldom happened.
Okay, good. So during 80% of the time when I start this cold, it starts and dies, and then it will start and run the next time I try. Is that right?
For today specifically, it dies twice. And seldomly dies when it's cold. But today it did it twice.
Okay. I've kind of lost. What are you thinking?
Well, it sounds like a fuel problem, but, boy, you know, without having equipment hooked up at the time, that's one of those we need to have it overnight so we can see what's going on first thing in the morning when it's cold.
Because?
And tie in, see if we're losing ignition, tie in, see if we're what our fuel pressure is.
A dirty idle air control motor,
yeah.
A dirty throttle blades. There's so many different things that can be going on here. But again, what I hear you saying is a lot of times in the when the engine's cold, I start it, it starts, but it dies. And then the second time I try to start it, it starts and runs. Is that right?
It happens today.
It's a yes or no answer.
Yes.
Okay, it's a yes or no answer.
Not always.
I understand that. That's why I said 80% of the time. I picked up on that. I'm trying to help you talk to your shop, because you said electrical at the very beginning, and Bob and I, neither one of us, we are shaking our heads, because we don't think this is going to be electrical. It may be related to an electrical component, but it's not going to be an electrical problem. So there's just too many things going on here. I think if this were a car that I had, I think one of the things we'd probably do is, like you said, leave it. I mean, you got to leave it overnight. I'd put fuel pressure gauges on it the night before, and I'd see if I got fuel pressure the next morning. If it doesn't have fuel pressure, I think you'll agree, and leaking injector, a bad fuel pressure regulator, or the check valve in the tank. Uh-huh. Can you think of anything else?
No. Have you noticed when you first start this thing up, does the idle, have you noticed whether the idle is lower than normal?
No, it just, idle is just fine.
Okay.
It works normally.
Okay, but again, when it's cold, we're expecting the idle to be normally higher than when it's warm. So you drive 30 miles, and you shut it off, and you get back in it a few minutes later. The idle is going to be different than the first thing in the morning. And that's kind of why we're asking these questions, is it's important. Because we want to know that there's a difference or a slight difference. Because colder, we should have a little faster idle. And so that's kind of what we're looking for. But anyway, I'd be looking at the throttle blades and the idle air control motor and the fuel pressure. Those would be the things. Mm-hmm. Again, we'd be in the $75 to $125 range. But I think on my side, I'm going to be closer to the $75 than I'm going to be the $125. Then if it's an idle air control motor that needs to be cleaned up, throttle blades that need to be cleaned up, those are kind of easy, but that fuel pump isn't easy. Mm-hmm. And that fuel pressure regulator isn't easy. We had an injector we thought was an injector issue, so we pulled the spark plugs on a four-cylinder, and we could see one of them was obviously different than the rest. So we swapped the plug and the coil, or the plug and the injector, because it was an easy one, and we brought them back in 2 or 3 weeks later, and the problem had moved. And so that was an easy one.
Yeah.
So, but the customer was willing to work with us on that. So many times they don't have time to work with you, so you have to make an educated guess. So that's kind of what it is. Luke, good luck to you. Good luck to you. We've got given you the very best advice we can. Let's move on to Mike. Mike, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I have a little problem. It's not a real biggie.
Okay.
I've got a 79 Lincoln, and it's got the hidden headlight, not hidden headlight doors, but it has the headlight doors that close.
Yes.
And evidently it's operated by the light switch.
Yep.
These are vacuum operated light doors.
Yep.
And when it's running, it's fine. The doors are closed and the lights aren't on. But when I parked the car in, well...
Well, hold on a minute. Stop. We already know what it is. Go ahead, Bob.
You're going to tell us that the doors are opening up gradually?
Yeah, when I park it, probably if I'm gone for 15 or 20 minutes, the light doors will be open. It looks like hell.
Okay.
All right. And so...
It's going to be like a $10,000 repair. Go ahead, Bob. Give them the bad news.
There's a vacuum motor out by the headlight that is overcome by a spring, and that vacuum motor's got a hole in the diaphragm, most likely. You can check that by if you have a vacuum pump, put it on it. Generally, yeah, you're going to find you've got a diaphragm that you're going to need to replace.
And so we're going to take the motor apart. We're going to replace the diaphragm under the best of condition, providing parts are available. If not, we're going to be doing a motor. And the easy part to do this is to take the line that goes from the motor to the mechanism that opens it and pinch it. Right. Overnight with a pair of vice grips. Now, we know where it's at, and we're not going to tell you where it's at. Anyway, we pinch the line, and if it doesn't open, then we know the vacuum, the problem is downstream a little further,
yeah,
right?
By the headlight.
By the headlight. And so
you can also have the switch that has the vacuum system on it, too, and it could be at that end of it. So it's a matter of finding it. And you could just have a simple vacuum hose somewhere along the line. It's got a rub spot in it that's got a vacuum leak in it.
Anything in the system from the pump to the mechanism that makes the headlight doors open and close, that's going to be the area. Now, give me a ballpark figure. Give me a range of on the low side and on the high side. And open the range as far as you want.
For a repair?
Yeah. Diagnosis and repair.
Oh, diagnosis. Well, as far as diagnosis, you're probably looking under $100 is the average time. As far as repair, that's going to be a little touchy because... finding the parts, there's a lot of aftermarket places that carry some of that stuff, but I wouldn't want to quote it at this point. But you're probably in the $100 to $200 range.
And that's exactly what I was thinking. It could be a $75 diagnostic, and we find a bad vacuum line that's hanging on the nipple with nothing, and we're creating a leak there. So that's the easy part. But on the other side, it's $100 to $200. Just, it depends on access of parts.
Yeah, the easiest way is to go in with a vacuum pump and apply vacuum and see what holds and what loses.
And we're going to use either a manually operated vacuum pump, a handheld one, or we're going to use something that actually plugs into the wall, and we're going to energize each portion of the system and make sure it holds vacuum. So we energize it, we put vacuum to the system, we've got clamps on either side of it. If the vacuum drops down, we've just identified the area where it's at. If the vacuum doesn't drop down, we move on. Good enough?
Right. Exactly.
All righty. Well, good luck to you, Mike. Thank you very much for bringing that up.
Dennis is your next caller, Dennis.
Dennis, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. I got a 2008 Wrangler X, and when I'm driving it, it doesn't show any heat gauge issues or anything. It's not overheating, but when I park it, it sounds like a percolator in my garage for about an hour and a half.
Could it be related to the heater or the air conditioning at all?
Yeah, because we've had a lot of problems with the air conditioning, the Freon running back in.
Right.
That sounds similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's what I think you should do. I think you should save yourself a lot of money, and we're going to teach you how to answer the questions.
All right.
It never happens when I never use the air. Or the defrost. I don't want the air on at all. I don't want the blower motor on. I don't want the fan on. I don't want nothing.
All right.
So I'm driving down the road, and when I park it, it doesn't make any noise at all. Then when the next day I use the air conditioning, and then it does make the noise when I park it. That would help us.
All right.
Got any other suggestions?
Yeah, the other problem we've had on those is they have a restrictor for the heater core. And we've had problems with people changing heater hoses and eliminating that restrictor.
Yep.
And it causes a noise similar. It's kind of a gurgling sound.
And it's just a matter of the restrictor kind of holds pressure in the heater core, right?
Right.
And it restricts the amount of hot coolant that runs through it. And so without the restrictor, we're probably going to suck from one side or the other back into the motor. And you're going to hear the movement of that water. Now, if that's the case... Well, actually, for either one of them, the noise should be coming from over by the glove box area or behind the glove box area. You could, if you helped us isolate where the noise is coming from, and you helped us telling us about the application. Now, the heater core is probably going to make the noise all the time, regardless of air conditioning application. But with air conditioning, what I said
to him, with air conditioning.
So you can save yourself a lot of diagnostic money if you can answer those questions that we pose to you. Okay?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you very much. Gurgling underneath the hood. And there's no kids in the car. So that's, you know, you kind of got to know under that that's what it is. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Bob and Ellen from Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School, sitting here next to me. Between the wives and the husbands, we're 150 years deep in car repair. So you're not likely to stump us with a 79 Lincoln headlight door problem. Because we've been there and we've done that. Mm-hmm. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open. We've got five of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The gentleman that's going to pick up your call is Gil. He's our engineer. I think he's been with me since I started here in 2011. And between the two of us, I can tell when I'm way off base because I'll hear this in the background. Did you really say that? and then, or he'll say something like, oh, you're going to pay for that one.
Oh,
you want to know?
Mark.
Yeah. Oh, Mark. 602-508-0960. You want to hear the best one? This is the one that got me in the most trouble.
Uh-oh. Yes.
and so I get a lot of calls about YouTube and people on the internet. You know, I got on the internet and they said do this and that. And that just wads up my panties something fierce. So I said to the person, I said, look, you are talking to a stranger, and he is telling you how to fix your car, and you're spending your money on his guess. Your chances of success are slim and none. It's something that I've done since 1988 all by myself, and I'm only as good as what you tell me. And I have a background in cars like you do. So I said, you don't know if the person you're talking to is a convict. You don't know how old they are. You don't know if they have grease in their fingernails. You don't know nothing. That person could be a doctor or a lawyer or a stockbroker or a gynecologist. And Renee looked at me, and she just kind of gave me the look like, you're an idiot. So a little later on, something happened, and I mentioned the G word again. And she looked at me, and she says, stop. She says, just stop it. This is on live radio. She says, there is no relationship between, you know, you got to stop using gynecologists. And I said, well, there's a relationship between the two of us. And she says, no, there isn't. And I said, yes, we both work under the hood. And that didn't go over really well.
Nope. Yeah.
And but it you know, who couldn't laugh at that? And I hadn't planned that, but it just kind of hit me. And that's why I get in trouble, is because sometimes there's a direct, the hard drive speaks in the mouth that has no RAM. there's no place. Let's put this over here. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Like I said, Gil would be the one that says hello to you, and we'll get you in just as soon as we can. But let me tell you about Kelly Clark Auto. I'm really proud because we've got guys that have been in business a long time on my best car repair shop list. Kelly has been in Phoenix since 1954. And this is at 12th Street and Glendale. Centrally located, he has ASE certified technicians that do mechanical services that cover virtually every inch of your car, your truck, your van, or your SUV. They're professional at Kelly Clark Automotive Specialist, honest, reliable, fairly priced. They're open Monday through Saturday, 12th Street and Glendale, centrally located. So if you live or work in Central Phoenix, Kelly Clark Automotive Specialist can help you out. Now, have you ever met Kelly Clark?
No.
He's a man that's, like, very big and very tall. His hands are like tennis rackets. But he's the nicest guy in the world. His wife, Rita, they invited us to their houseboat. This was 20 years ago. So Renee and I go, and Rita says to both of us, we have a rule here in the houseboat that men always sit down to go to the bathroom because the boat rocks. And it creates a problem. But women, we don't have the problem. So I said, I understand, but it really meant nothing to me. So the next morning, I get up because I hear somebody in the kitchen, and it's Rita. She's making coffee. Kelly's still asleep. Renee's still asleep. So I get this brilliant idea where I go into the bathroom that's right next to the kitchen, and we're still buoyed up. We're still not moving yet. And I get this big glass, and I fill it up with water, and I lift it up real high, and I pour it into the toilet from about 3 feet up. And she comes through the door like a fire truck. Mark Salem, I talk. And she stops. So everybody had bacon and eggs, but I had like burnt leather. I don't think she ever forgave me for that, but it was one of the best. You know, she just had no idea. And so she looked at the toilet seat, and I hadn't splashed but one little thing. And so I said, I got that. And so I didn't do that again, but I did. They're just really nice people. Yes. Just really, really nice people. And Kelly's been around a long time, and he's been through the gamut when we were younger. Fast boats, hot rod cars, all that kind of stuff.
All that money spent.
But you know what? We could teach a lot of these young guys a whole lot about fundamentals about cars. Because once you understand the fundamentals of fuel, spark, and compression, it's kind of hard for us not to figure this out. So that's kind of what it's all about. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Hey, Gil, are you still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. I could hear you snoring, so I was wondering if you were just kind of sleeping and the lines
sorry
were...
About that, Mark.
All right. No, it's okay. It's okay. So we did look, and I think you had either your son or your son-in-law look for the Civic light, mm-hmm.
Right.
And nobody can find it.
Nobody can find anything about it.
Okay.
So I think...
I think Bob's right. I think it's part of a word, or it's part of a message, but I can't think what no would be part of. An N-O. But it could also be an NQ. It could also be a whole lot of other things. It could be the back half of an M. So I don't know.
I can guarantee you Monday I'm going to be pulling up a dash and seeing what's in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got my curiosity up now.
Absolutely. I was working on a Wrangler, 2016 Wrangler, the other day, and I had to look up the signal for electronic control throttle. Throttle, because I'd never seen that before. So actually I called Alan, my son, and I said, hey, I took a picture of this, you know. Tell me what it is. And he goes, oh, that's electronic control. Oh, okay, fine. Thank you very much. I was asking for someone else.
I guarantee you, there's not an hour goes by that I don't call Jeremy over and say, what in the world is this?
This
new stuff is mind-boggling.
But the young guys actually have that over us.
Yeah.
They get the icons and the symbols and all that kind of stuff. So that's not something we grew up with. That 79 Lincoln didn't have any icons. Yeah. You know, it had a temp gauge and it had an oil pressure switch.
Well, I guarantee you that 79 Lincoln, you don't grab a lab scope and lay it up there and say, okay, let's start talking.
Yeah. You can leave all the scanners you want in the drawers because that ain't going to happen. Anybody, Gil?
Nope,
602-508-0960. We're here to help you with your car problem. All you have to do is kind of give us the year, make, and model, the miles, and then some of the symptoms. Have you had any cars lately that you smiled about, that you said to yourself, the young whippersnapper pulled off a good one?
That happens on a daily basis, I can guarantee you. But
Bob is your next caller, Bob.
We had one the other day. It came in, engine making noise, and it was a Dodge with a Hemi engine in it. And it was a case of trying to figure out, you know, why this took place, and we finally found out that it was lack of oil changes that did it. Mm-hmm. But it ended up costing us an engine. But those Hemis were real notorious problems with valve seats going bad on them. It made us a firm believer of regular oil changes on that.
It's always been that way. Yeah. It's always been that way. I think folks don't understand three kinds of oil. Conventional, it's got a 3,000 to 5,000 mile interval. It's pretty strict. It doesn't really work well after 5. Then you got semi-synthetic or blended.
Blend.
And those go from 5 to 7,500. Then you got them synthetics that go from 75 to 10 or 12, depending on which oil you're selling. So all of them have different intervals. They all have different qualities. They all go a different length. But you can't put a semi. I have a lot of people who put semi or synthetic in their car, but they change it at 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 miles because their car's going to love them more. That's the only conclusion you can draw. I got a lot of customers that are in the 10,000 to 12,000 year range. I just bring them in once a year. Just bring them in April before the summer so we can make sure that you'll go through the summer. Yeah.
We use kind of a driving conditions. We go with the regular, we use the blend.
Uh-huh.
If the person is driving very few miles, that way we can get them in, find out what's going on with the tires and the rest of it. If they're putting a lot of miles on it in a real quick hurry, go to the full synthetic and give them some miles time on it.
And you're right. That one that I was talking about, the guy that might do 10 or 12,000 miles a year, you can put him in synthetic once a year, or you can put him in a blend for twice a year.
Yeah.
And if we're going to do twice a year, my suggestion is April and November. Because the beginning of the summer, the beginning of the winter. So we've got the two, I mean, really, summer's the worst. But
yeah.
If you just 6 months apart them, then they're going to be at good.
We have fleet accounts that do the
full synthetic
because they don't have time to keep coming in, and they put a lot of miles on. And as long as they keep track of what's going on, then
works great.
So, yeah.
All right, real quick, the Ford diesel has how many quarts?
Well, 10 to 15.
I just read this the other day. That's the reason why. It's 15. And the Dodge has?
10.
12.
Or 12.
And the Duramax is 10. But I read that the other day, and it kind of surprised me. It just kind of surprised me. You know why Ford has so many? It's because they figured out real quick that they were wearing the oil out. And so they added a bigger oil pan because that 6-liter was such a big old piece of junk. And we had the piece of junk. I'm being nice. So, Bob, good morning to you, Bob. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Wait, do you guys see many problems with gasoline direct injection engines with coked up intake valves?
Oh, yeah.
And would you advise someone not to buy a gasoline direct injection engine because the problems you see?
Well, let's talk about it real quick. The gasoline injection engine injects the gasoline into the cylinder as opposed to behind the valve.
Right.
So when we spray the back of the valve with gasoline, we used to clean off the oil, and everything was fine. The back of the valve wouldn't get dirty. Now that we've moved the injector into the cylinder, like the spark plug, now we're not washing the back of that valve off. So now we've got this big black crap that's building on the back side of the valve that's causing all kinds of problems, where before we cleaned that. Now, there's lots of companies that have come out with chemicals that are very lucrative that we can clean up the back of your intake valves, but it's very lucrative, and it's an expensive process.
Right.
And it costs money, and we like to sell that because we make good money on those. But the equipment up front is quite expensive. So what do you think? Well, are you going to tell anybody to buy direct injection?
I wouldn't advise it, I don't think. But on the same sense, they do have a lot of advantages. The power is great.
Mm-hmm.
Drivability is really nice, but, there's more upkeep on them.
I think the problem is a twofold problem. We need to talk to the people that are making the gas, and we need to talk to the people that are making the oil. And we have to figure out how we're going to keep the back of that valve clean.
Yeah, clean.
And so maybe we change the oil composition to where we don't turn and oxidize it and turn it into this black tar that just grows and grows and grows. Keep in mind that a conventional oil with a conventional oil turns to an oxidized, otherwise a solid, at 325. A semi-synthetic is about 400, and you've seen the Mobil 1 commercials there at 500 on the synthetic.
Right.
So I'm wondering, if we put a synthetic in the direct ignition, are we exceeding that 500 mile or 500 degree temperature at the back side of the valve? If we're not, then synthetic would be the answer. But if we are, then there's nothing is the answer.
Yeah.
And we're having to jackhammer those back of the intakes apart a lot. So I'm not suggesting it, but I'm thinking this is going to be a problem we're going to overcome. I'm hoping this year, because it's already been a problem for a year or two already. So I'm thinking that sooner or later we're going to
figure it out. Yeah.
They'll get it figured out. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Bob, thank you for that question. Direct ignition, yes or no? I think I'm going to have a conversation with my customer, but I'll let them make the decision. So I think the people that the question to you is, on the other side of the break, is the people that drive 5,000 miles a year more likely to suffer from the direct injection problem, or the people that drive 15,000 miles a year? Is this a mileage, or is this the time? We'll talk about that. 602-508-0960. There's 5 lines available. You're welcome to join us. We'll be right back. Deliver homemade baked goods to you after you use them, and thank you for patronizing them. And is that something from the old days?
Yes.
Oh. So at Kurtz Automotive, they're an independent family-owned operation, been around, like I said, since 1987. They do domestic import, both gas and diesel. They have two young whippersnappers, Eric and Jeff, that are as good as them young guys can be, the millenniums. So anyway, ASE certified technicians, great guy. Kurtz is not a taskmaster, but he understands the three of them make an unbeatable team, and they do. Kurtz Automotive, I-17 and Bell. Let's go to the phone. Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. If I'm driving a lot between Phoenix and Tucson on the weekends, is there a best mile per hour for my car? Like, am I hurting it at going 85, or, like, is there a sweet spot?
You're asking me if I'm going to give you permission. Did you hear that comment? Not according to my wife, someone in the studio said. I think the speed limit between Tucson and Phoenix is 75. You can do whatever you want. I'm not going to suggest that you... Now, I've been told by other cowboys that are friends of mine that you just hop on the tail about a half a mile behind somebody who's blowing down the highway. And hopefully they'll get them before they get you. The idea is the less RPM, the better the fuel economy. The motor doesn't care. It's like a horse. It doesn't care if it's trotting along at 5 miles an hour or running out at 10 miles an hour. It just doesn't like to run like you're running from a pack of Indians at 20 or miles an hour. So you just don't want to run your horse into a lather. But by the same token, I'm thinking an RPM. I'll tell you what on my truck. I'm usually on 75. I'm usually at 76, 77, 78. Got the cruise control set, trying to maintain speed, trying to get the best fuel economy I can because diesel's 265 this morning.
Yeah.
So that the answer to your question is you can roll at whatever speed you want, but the lower the RPMs, the better the fuel economy. And the guy that stops you with a Smokey Bear hat really doesn't care what excuse you're going to give him.
Hurting the car if, like, you know, sometimes you get up to 80, 85. Is that...
No, because your speed limiter is going to kick in most cars at 93. So the computer is going to take care of you. It's not going to let you be stupid. So the computer is not going to let you over-rev it, and it's not going to let you overrun it. And obviously, if it sees the car starting to overheat, it's probably going to trim back some timing, maybe some fuel. It's going to trim back your foot and not let you hurt your motor. Agree?
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All righty, you bet, Steve. That was a good question. Glenn, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hello, me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
I'm sorry. I have a question from the olden days. I'm wondering if it was ever true and if it's true today about when you turn off your car, you should turn off the air conditioner first.
Okay. Bob?
Ever heard that?
Oh, heck yes.
Well, we hear it all the time, but I would see no reason to do that because as soon as you turn your ignition off, it's turning off the air conditioning anyway. No, I don't see any reason to do that.
Let me change your question. Let me change your question, Glenn. Mark, you and Bob are old-time guys. You've been around the block. Do you guys shut off your air conditioning before you shut off the engine, or do you make your wives... Well, first of all, we don't make our wives do anything, but do you ask your wives to turn off the air conditioning before you turn on the engine, or do you patronize that idea? And the answer is hell no, because like Bob says, as soon as you turn the key off, we disconnect the air conditioning. And what happens to the air conditioning compressor, whether you shut it off first or whether you turn the key off, is exactly the same thing. Exactly. So
that's what I thought. I always wonder if there was anything to it.
Well, there never has been, in my opinion.
I never understood where that came along either.
But let me ask you a question, kind of a self-preservation question. Is this a bet between you and your wife? Because I'm about to change my mind.
No, it's just all my free time. I wonder these things.
Nope. It's never, in our opinion, I'll speak for you too, it's never been true. It's an old wives' tale that just has manifested itself into many generations, and today we still hear the same thing.
Yeah. I'll be darned. Well, thank you.
All right, Glenn, thank you very much. Al, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hi there.
Hi.
I want to thank you for your counsel. I'm an old fossil, and you've changed my theories on oil and tires and batteries and what have you.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
And I have an electronics background.
Okay.
And,
Wait a minute. Are you an engineer?
Yes.
Do you know what engineers really are?
I understand.
No. I'm talking to Bob. They actually drive that train and they go, woo, woo. I'm teasing you. You know I'm teasing you.
Yes, I do.
And I
agree with you. I've worked with a number of them, and they're never wrong.
Well, they're kind of like Bob's wife and my wife, but we're not going to get into that. But we're willing to help you anyway.
Okay. Well, I was calling, oddly enough, on the previous caller's subject.
Okay.
Which is turning the appliances off prior to turning off the engine. Okay? It's not that all the stuff turns off. It's when you turn the engine on and start it that there's an electrical shock to each of those components, and over time, that shock factor takes its toll on those components. And I didn't call to get into an argument with you.
No,
just challenge one of your philosophies.
No, and I'll speak, and then you're next. There's a difference here because he was talking about shutting the engine off or turning the air off before he turns the engine off.
Understood.
That's different than what you've placed on the table. Now, I think, but I'm not sure, I think in the start mode, ever since probably electronic ignition, I think in the start mode we're not activating anything, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
It's when you drop it back. After it started, drop the key back to the run position after it started.
Yeah.
There's still that shock factor to all the components that are sitting there in the on position.
You're right. I see what your point is. But let me preface this now. Let's pretend we got the headlights. That's a bad example. Wipers, hazards, air conditioning. Let's pretend that we got those three running. So when we go to the start mode, I think we can agree that we're not going to be having that stuff on. But when we let go, what he's saying is all three of them are going to hit.
Right.
Okay. I think the cumulative total might bear witness to your side. Mm-hmm. I think all three of them is going to be a shock to the electrical system.
Right.
But
don't forget the radio.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's kind of a minor amp. That might be one or two amps there.
But also, those systems all go through relays, and so you're not hitting it with that full amperage. You're hitting it as the relay shuts, and then your voltage going to it. I don't think you're going to see that much of a surge.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you bring up a great point. This is a good discussion. Here's the second part of the question, because this is how I think. What problems do we see today that we can directly relate to the issue of starting your car with everything on? And I don't think I've seen battery life be anything to do that.
I wouldn't worry so much about the battery life as I would the wear and tear on the individual components.
Okay, but in defense of the other side of the issue, what difference does it make if nothing is on, radio, air conditioning, wipers, that all isn't on, you start the car up and then you reach over, flip the radio on, flip the wipers on, flip the air conditioning on. Isn't that the same as?
I guess it could be. It's just the fact that in your application, everything's on at once and it really hits the whole system.
Oh, okay. And I agree with you that there's a difference if the minute we let go of the start button that four people have got the down windows button on, then we got air conditioning and wiper, and we're loading the heck out of the system. I agree with you. Right?
I agree.
All right. And we agree that the instantaneous of application on a variety of electrical systems is going to create a shock that probably the car's not designed for. Because the car's not designed for four windows going down at the same time, the air conditioning, all that kind of electrical load happening at the same time. So, yes, I would agree with you in an exaggerated way. I would agree with you to, but again, the flip side of the coin is I don't know that we've ever had to spend money fixing that.
Yeah, I can't say as I've seen an issue where those components failed prematurely one way or the other.
Yeah, and of course, prematurely is a kind of a... you don't really know where to go. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take care of Jared and Don. We'll be right back. Now, when it comes to transmissions, there's a guy in town here that's an old-timer, Phil. Phil actually worked on transmissions in dinosaurs before he started working on cars. Phil's at 40th Street in Washington. He's been around since 1968. He's been in the same location since 1968. And they do a great job. Now, the thing on the transmission shop is practice making it happen and stop by Phil's, but call him first, and not Monday mornings or Friday afternoons for obvious reasons, but he'll or one of his staff guys will probably take a ride with you. Now, you're not going to take one of their guys for 2 hours. You're going to take one of their guys for 15 or 20 minutes, but that's free. It at least lets them see you make it happen. And then they can, we're a lot better off to fix it. But Phil's been around a long time, so if you ever go by 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the road, if you travel that on a regular basis, you know what I already know, and that's Phil's been there a long time, and experience means a lot when it comes to transmissions. Let's go back to the phones, and let me see who I've got. Jared, thank you very much, Jared, for holding. How can I help you?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, great. Okay, I have a 1988 Porsche 924S. The S shares the same 2.5-liter engine, a Porsche engine, with the 944. It was not charging the battery, and so I put a voltmeter on it like I always do, and, you know, when that's not happening, and it showed that it wasn't charging, and I thought it was the alternator. I replaced the alternator. Turns out it still won't charge. A neighbor came by to help me, and he did a little testing, and he said it was what he calls the energizer wire. And it was I looked at a schematic, and it looks like it goes to the alarm. So I bypassed that wire and went from the back of the alternator directly to the battery, and it actually started charging. However, it's making this ticking sound, tick, 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 and so I didn't want it to tear up anything or destroy anything else, so I disconnected my wire, and I'm kind of back to where I started. So I just wanted to know if you had any ideas as to what it could be or what I should do or how to troubleshoot it. I also checked the fuses, the fuse box, and there's no fuses that are blown that I can find.
We're a little confused about the alternator being energized by the alarm. We're more than confused by that.
There's a wire. It's a blue wire, and it runs from I'm not telling you anything new. Okay. There's two wires on the back of an alternator,
right.
And one of those wires it runs to my alarm system, and I think the alarm, I don't know what it does. It controls a lot of stuff, I guess.
Okay. All right. Well, we can't talk about specific wires because we don't have a wiring diagram in front of us. But if you've got something off the alternator that's running to an alarm system, we're kind of concerned about that. We obviously have to identify what's clicking. Is it a relay that's clicking? Is it a blend door that's clicking? Is the alternator clicking on and off? Is the air conditioning compressor clicking on or off? I mean, can you tell where the clickings come from?
No, I'm not sure.
So
I should diagnose the clicking.
Well, let me ask you a question. Since you've made this wiring change, it's been charging, so it's not been dead, and it's sat for longer than 24 hours, and it still starts, so there's not an everlasting short or draw. Is that correct?
I disconnected it, minututes later because I couldn't stop the clicking.
Okay. All right. Well, that's just not the way we do it. We need 1 volt over battery voltage, so we take a sneak peek at the battery, and let's say it's 12.4. And we need to see 13.4, 13.8. So that's what we're looking for first. You have to know those numbers. And we need a volt to a volt and a half over what we call static battery voltage, which means your key's in your pocket. And then from there, we're going to look at the diode pattern on the alternator. And we're going to determine if the diodes look good, because the three diodes they handle 1/3 of all the amperage. And if you've got one popped, you have two things. You have 1/3 less amperage, and number two, you have a short, more than likely a draw. The second thing is we'd have to look at it to find out where it's energized. Do you have any idea on a Porsche where it's energized?
I sure do.
Let's talk about general cars. Where are they energized? Where are we turning on the alternator?
Ignition,
somewhere along in the ignition.
Mm-hmm.
So when we turn the key on, we're going to energize the alternator. It then takes a snapshot of the battery voltage and determines whether I need to light up or not light up based on the voltage it sees. Mm-hmm. Your alternator is not going to be really any different than any of the American or domestic cars we work with.
1 minute.
Because we've had alternators with one big wire that runs to the back of the output, and then we have two other wires. One of them runs through a light, and one of them runs usually through an ignition feed.
Mm-hmm.
So... Those are the kinds. There's a couple of guys in town here that are really good Porsche people. Don't you have one over by you, or is he on Central? I don't know who they are, and I can't tell you that you're going to be perfectly happy, but I do know that there's a lot of us gray-haired guys that all we need is a wiring schematic. And
trace it down.
And just find out where everything is going and what we're missing. But the clicking noise, I think to chase the clicking noise is chasing your tail. Let's get it fixed first, and then if the clicking goes away, we're home free. But I think chasing the clicking is just something you gave yourself. It's something that you have now since you've done the work. I say we back up, because a lot of times the question is why is it doing this? And the answer is I'll tell you once I fix it. But I can't answer why it's doing that till I tell you when I'm going to fix it. So what part of town do you live in?
I live in Avondale.
Okay. I don't have any electrical wizards in Avondale. So give me an estimate on it. Look-see, Bob.
You're probably looking in the $100 range.
Well, if you went to 38th Avenue New School, Bob says you're probably looking at a $100 range, and that's give or take $25 to go in there and do the analyzation, do the electrical systems analysis and stuff like that. What you want to come back with is no clicking. You want it to charge. You want it to shut off when you shut the key off, and you don't want to have a draw. That's what you're hoping for, and that's the easy part. Anyway, thank you very much, Jared. Don, you stay right there because I'm going to get you on the other side of the break, but I got to do that first. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem, Bob, and Ellen from Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And like I said before, Bob's one of the best diagnosticians, and I oftentimes send people to your shop from anything west of like 7th Street. Anything west of 7th Street from Avondale all the way to north, you guys get it. And what's the best part is you don't let me down. And I get
you
lots of attaboys. And
you're right.
I sent you that Chrysler where that gentleman had a bus problem, and you found and fixed that. That's the impressive part. It's this, the story starts off with, I've had it to every shop in town, and nobody can fix it. And then trying to get symptoms out of them sometimes is tough. They want to tell you about all the past repairs. And I say to them, I don't care about the past repairs that obviously were unsuccessful because we wouldn't be talking about this. But you guys handle it perfectly. And I'm real proud of you for doing that.
Thanks to our son-in-law who does a very, very good job.
I know.
And Bob also.
And he taught the son-in-law.
Yeah.
And he taught the son-in-law. Yeah. So when you're working, what's the name of that that karate movie, what did they call the older guy? They called the young guy something, and then the old guy was something. And we use those terms, but I can't think of them right now. Let's go to Don. Don, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a cruise control problem.
Okay.
And it's basically that the step button doesn't work.
Okay.
And I'm kind of wondering, is it a big deal, not a big deal? It worked intermittently for about 3 months. And then just quit working.
Tell us what kind of car you got.
Oh, I'm sorry. 2011 Silverado, 5.3, four-wheel drive.
Okay. What do you think? How many miles are on it?
125.
I think it's
the
turn.
The power button comes on. You know, when you hit the cruise power button, it lights up.
Okay.
That button just doesn't set the speed.
Okay. Brake light switch is on. I mean, something as silly as the brake lights are hanging on, but you didn't say anything about the battery's dead every morning, so I'm paying attention to that.
That's fine.
The turn signal, your button's on the turn signal, right?
No, it's on the steering wheel.
Okay.
The toggle switch.
All right.
The bottom toggle switch is the set, the top
got
in
it.
The middle is the on button, and the top toggle switch is the resume.
Okay. I think on that 2011, we're not going to have scanner data where we can see set cruise control, or do you think we do?
I don't think so on that one.
On the newer ones, we would have, where we could actually plug a scanner in to see if the signal's being sent, because that's kind of the first question, don't you think? Has anything else on your steering wheel been intermittent with respect to the horn?
No.
Or anything at all from the turn signals or the hazard switch on top, is there any intermittent problems in the steering column other than the fact that the set button doesn't work?
No. The only other thing that I didn't notice, and I've only noticed it once, and it could be my hearing because I'm older and don't wear my hearing aids,
okay,
is that I thought I heard when I was trying to just, let's see if this works, and I would hit the set button, I thought I heard a click in the radio.
Okay.
That I couldn't, bet on that. It's just, no, that's the only problem that I'm having. It's just not something that's crude. Something that's okay.
Crude. We don't want to hear any click in the radio, because if you run across that, then that kind of helps us out. That kind of helps us out. You got any, have you fixed that in 100 years?
No, I haven't. Okay. I know there's a system of testing it. We mm-hmm. need to find out where we're losing our signal. And like you were saying, you know, you've got a switch that deactivates it, and if that's malfunctioning. And I know those had big problems with the brake switch, and that part of that switch is a separate from the brake lights, too. So
okay.
It's very possible that it's there. But that's the way we would go about it, is find out where we've got our signal and where we're losing it.
Hey, Don, try this. This is crazy, but just try this. Mm-hmm. Go down the road by yourself. I don't want your wife sitting next to you screaming because you're going too fast. And I want you to take your left foot and hook it behind the brake pedal and pull the pedal towards you. Okay? And then see if the set button works. Because, really? Really, I'm not kidding you. You're shaking your head.
Yeah, if it's adjusted too tight or the switch is out of adjustment, it could be. That's what turns your cruise control off, is it touching the brake pedal. And if that's malfunctioning, it certainly can do that.
And so by hooking it, I'm hoping that you push the plunger in a little bit further, or you somehow turn off the brake lights a little bit better. And I want to tell you something. If you came to one of us and you said, the set button doesn't work until I reach down and hook the brake pedal and pull it towards me, you saved yourself $75 on the minimum. Because you've just helped eliminate 50% or more of our testing.
Yeah.
So something as simple and stupid as that is very helpful, okay?
So otherwise it's just a diagnostic deal.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You're going to have a transducer, and we're going to be measuring the signal from the set switch to the transducer, right?
Okay. You're right.
And that's it. We're going to have to, and then if that's there, then we have to start checking all the other circuits on the cruise control transducer to find out which one of it's stopping, or maybe you hit set and we're supposed to energize this circuit and we're not. So then we have to go find out why that circuit's not being energized. So
does the button ever just go bad? They got to pull the whole steering wheel off, or whatever they have to.
It's possible, but I haven't seen much switch problems on those.
And really and truly, we can pull the horn pad off of that and probably disconnect the harness, maybe even underneath the dash on the bottom part of the steering column, and see if the continuity on that switch is good.
Yeah.
So I mean, to test the switch is going to be a little bit of work, but that would probably be the first place you'd look.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You betcha. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've got probably one or two more callers in, but before we do that, let me tell you another really great shop. The only shop in Mesa that's been able to pass the muster, the only shop in Mesa that really filled up all the things I need a shop to be, is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Now, this is the third generation of a family. They started with Cecil. They started with John at Country Club University, Cecil at Gilbert. They ended up at Gilbert and Apache. But now we've got the third generation, which is Brian and Thelma. And they've been providing expert auto repair and light truck and maintenance service to the customers in the Mesa area since 1970. They have ASE certified technicians. They provide the highest level of automotive service, and they're really good at diagnosis, bidding, repair, and verification, because that's the four you better make sure you're doing. It's never been easier or more convenient to keep your vehicle in top-notch shape unless you use Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. It's on Main Street just east of Stapley.
Rick is your next caller.
Main Street just east of Stapley. Rick, good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful this morning. You know, several times I think I've heard you mention a place up by 40th Street and Greenway called Blackwell.
Yeah, it's Greenway. Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
You bet. And I want to tell you, I have had nothing but great experiences with that shop. And they should have a big star on your list next to their name, because they have taken care of me for several years. I owned a motorized stagecoach.
Okay.
And I took it to them after taking it to several mechanics around town, and he was the only one who didn't say, don't ever bring this back.
Well, that's probably because he clipped you for $5,000.
Well, you know, I helped him build his new place there at Greenway and 40th Street, because I had several commercial vehicles that he took care of, including the limo.
Yep.
But he's been my mechanic for over 30 years, And let me tell you, I'm nothing but pleased with the work I get done there.
And
so I know you check out your people very well.
Yeah. Well, Tom and I have been friends since when he built that building, because we built ours in 94. He was shortly after Renee and I.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, if you look at his gray brick with the red adobe highlights, that's exactly what our shop looks like, because he said, I like yours. Can I borrow some plans? And I said, sure. So he has bays that load on both sides and then in the back, and so do I. So our buildings are very similar. We're cut from the same cloth. We both make the same stupid mistakes. We both have wives who hate us 50% of the time. If you go in there and challenge Tom Blackwell and you say, nobody in town's been able to do this, that's like waving a flag in front of a bull.
Exactly.
I think the guy sitting next to me, Bob, has the same problem. If you start with, nobody can fix this, nobody can fix this, then usually the...
Let me at it.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday when I stopped by there, someone had actually fallen into the front drawer and broken the hinge. And where did I find Tom? But in the back, fixing the hinge. You welded it up, and I helped him put the door back on.
Yep.
That's the kind of customers he has. They like him so well, they'll help him.
No, you're right. Ask Tom about 1970 through 1978, and ask him what zip code he was in, and that's the time he was in jail. And and he served time for fraud in the automotive repair industry. But he has been, what is it called?
Reconciliation.
Yeah, he's gone through
reconciled.
And, of course, I'm teasing you when I say that. But Tom and I have been friends for more than 30 years, and I respect him like you do. He is one of those guys that you can throw the gauntlet in front of him, and he'll perform for you. And what he has that I don't have is he can make anything. He can make anything. He has a machine shop, and he has the skills. He'll put a 727 jet motor in the back of your Corvair if that's what you want. If that's what you want. So, yeah, the best part is...
He went from my stagecoach to my rat rod, and they just did a perfect job. I can't,
can't
say enough about him.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you very much for that. Yeah, Blackwell is a... is the piecework. He'll call me up and go, hey, what are you doing? And I said, and then I'll usually step into the bathroom by my office and shut the door, and I'll say, guess where I'm at? Because you can hear when somebody's in. And so
Carrie is your next caller.
He's a good guy. All righty, Carrie, I think you might be our last one. What can I do for you?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a 2014 Toyota Camry XLE. That's the one with the push button start.
Okay.
I just bought the car from a small town dealer, and after the deal I found out I only had one key fob and didn't have both of them, and he didn't know what happened to it and all this. But got any suggestions on how I should go about getting another key fob and get it programmed?
I think. Can't we order one? We do.
Yeah.
And we have to reprogram them all together. You have to bring in both your key fobs, and we get them through the dealer. They're pricey.
Yeah.
But then they have to be reprogrammed, and we also do that, too. So
It's a situation where you can't. Ace Hardware has got some fobs now that are kind of amazing. I've not seen fobs like this in the aftermarket, and that would be an option to a dealer who's very proud of those key fobs. But the answer to your question is yes, that's not a big deal, but this can be $100 to $200 worth of work. It depends on the price of the key fob, and it depends on the programming. If the programming is simple enough where we plug a piece of equipment in, and it says, put the old key in, yes, I see it, take it out, put the new key in, yes, I see it, oh, you're only allowed three keys, and you have already three keys in there. Okay, well, let's delete all but this key, and you have to go through that. Mm-hmm. And then you wave a dead chicken around your head. You have to honk the horn three times. You have to get out of the car, run around the car four times, slap all the doors. It's that silly, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that silly. And, I'm exaggerating. Forget the dead chicken part. But am I close in your $100 to $200 range?
Right.
Okay. And then you get two key fobs, and you get two keys, and you have everything that you need to have.
So you get two new key fobs then?
No, just one. Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to copy yours. Yours is the master. So we need yours to make to get the door open in the computer's head so we can do our work. So we have to have one that works in order to. Otherwise, anybody could steal your car, take it to, you know, a shop and have another key made and say, "Well, I lost it." Well, if you lost it, you're in big trouble. So, yes, but we can do that. What part of town do you live?
Up in Scottsdale.
Okay. I'd probably call Blackwell at 40th Street in Washington, or Greenway, and talk to him. You guys do it, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and we're way south in Tempe, so we wouldn't be a good option for you.
So I'm looking at, like, 250 or?
No, 100 to 200. That includes 100. The fob and all the programming. And so at the end of the day, you end up with two fobs, the one you have now and the new one.
Okay.
Alrighty.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, Bob and Ellen, thanks very much for spending your Saturday with
me. Thank you for having us.
Ellen, I always talk about you and my daughter and my wife because you guys are in an industry that doesn't welcome you with open arms. And it's really hard for the guys to understand that you are a very viable person to talk to. And if they make you mad, they're not likely to get past. You're not going to call a technician off the floor to have them come and walk them through a problem that they want to fix themselves. That's not what we're all about.
Exactly, right.
We can be nice and we can quote prices, but that's it. Thank you very much for spending your Saturday with us. Nope, no problem. Bob and Ellen from Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. You can't go wrong if you live in that area, and I'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT.